This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Ben, you mentioned that you've been eating cheese because you had heard that cheese helps people fall asleep. Yeah. Is that right?
The funny thing is that things become part of your ritual because you'll have a successful night of sleep and you'll think, what did I do? Oh, I ate a piece of cheese and then I had an onion and then I spun around in circles 3 times and talked to my neighbor for 15 minutes. Well, I better do that again tonight.
Welcome to How To. I'm Charles Duhigg. Each week on this show, we help folks confront some of life's toughest challenges. And in a bunch of episodes, experts have given us this one piece of advice again and again. Get more sleep. But what do you do if you can't fall asleep in the first place?
I've had sleep problems for about most of my life. It's like trying to push a balloon full of air underwater and hold it there. And that's the sense I get when I'm trying to fall asleep. And the only time I feel like I can really fall asleep is when I've missed a night of sleep, like a night before, and then I'm like really, really exhausted so I can sleep.
This is Ben. He lives in San Francisco, and he's a super busy guy. In addition to working as a therapist, he's a published author, and he exercises a lot. He's a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But for years, Ben has been operating on little to no sleep.
You kind of wake up feeling like a broken pane of glass. You just feel kind of shattered and sort of out of it, like you haven't really closed your eyes all night.
And if you're just laying in bed and you're like, you're trying to go to sleep, is your mind racing? Are you feeling like...
Yeah, it's racing and all sorts of narratives. You know, I'm a therapist, so I think about my patients, or I work at a clinic and I think about that. It's like there's a party happening in my head and I can't stop.
That sounds torturous.
I also get this phenomenon where I get really itchy. Like I'll wake up with scratch marks on my face because I've been scratching myself. It's crazy.
We've all had sleepless nights, right? I took Ambien every night for like a year to help me sleep, which incidentally is precisely what doctors tell you not to do. But I'm not alone. According to studies, more than a third of Americans are regularly not getting enough sleep. But for Ben, his lack of sleep has come to shape his entire life.
It's like my anxiety goes through the roof. It's like your bandwidth decreases. Your temper gets shorter. You feel disorganized and you can't see straight.
A night of no sleep can be disastrous for Ben. He literally won't drive his car the next day because he's worried about getting in an accident. At work, he starts zoning out when he's listening to his patients, and it's been terrible for his love life.
Well, it's like if I'm going to sleep over at someone's home, or if they come over to my home, I will not sleep if there's another human being in my bed or if I'm not in my own bed. And it's like, what happens if I get married? What am I supposed to do? You know? And is it going to be like the 1950s where we're in separate beds? You know? You know, I don't know.
Ben is clearly desperate for help. He's visited a sleep doctor. He's taken medications. He's tried drinking alcohol and avoiding alcohol. He's even tried eating this stuff called valerian root, which is this herb known as nature's Valium. He's used noise machines. He's sworn off screens. He's gone to bed hungry. He's gone to bed after eating a big wedge of cheese because some studies have found that dairy helps you fall asleep. Ben says cheddar is the best one to eat. And so we found an expert with a different approach. This guy who's a former monk turned meditation guru.
Hi, Ben. It's Andy from Headspace here. How are you doing?
Oh, I know who you are.
Oh, good.
I recognize that voice.
That is the voice of Andy Puddicombe, the co-founder of Headspace, the popular meditation app. And when we come back, we'll see if he can get into Ben's Headspace and help him catch more Z's.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
We're back with Ben, who are calling Sleepless in San Francisco, and Andy Puddicombe, who runs the meditation app Headspace. Andy's journey to mindfulness began a couple of decades ago in Southeast Asia. That's where he lived and trained as a Buddhist monk for 10 years.
I reached the conclusion that my mind was simply too busy, and I constantly felt overwhelmed by thoughts and emotions, and I didn't feel like I had a huge amount of sort of purpose, direction, or meaning in my life. So I made the decision to quit college and go and become a monk instead.
I imagine you're like living in a monastery. You're in this country that at least initially is foreign to you. You're probably around a bunch of people who are very different from you. Is sleep part of your training? Like, what is that like when you first get there?
Well, sleep's a really interesting thing in the monastery, you know. So, every monastery is different. And some monasteries, if you're not in retreat, you might only be doing sort of a few hours of meditation a day. And in those monasteries, you might be getting as much as sort of 6 hours sleep a night. But in the retreat monasteries where you're meditating for maybe 16 or 18 hours a day, you're really only getting about 4 hours sleep a night. So it's enough sleep to sort of be comfortable. I mean, there were definitely nights when I would have liked a little more. But within that context, I would never recommend that people have that little sleep outside of that environment. But within that environment, it was helpful.
When Andy returned to the UK, he started working at a clinic training other people in meditation. And a number of his patients were struggling with sleep problems.
One was a young woman. She was probably about in her late 20s, maybe 30. She'd had some rather traumatic things happen as a teenager. And for 10 to 15 years, she hadn't had a whole night's sleep. And she came really not believing that anything would. She felt like she tried everything. She'd been to therapy and she tried medication. And she really kind of felt desperate. And it was probably week two or week three when she came back to the clinic and she cried. And she said she'd had her first full night's sleep. And I don't know which of us was more surprised. She discovered kind of that she could sleep again and she gained confidence
really
in sleeping again.
Wow.
I think it can be a really lonely place, especially at night when you can't reach out to anyone else and to feel like you're the only person going through that. So just know that this really does impact so many different people, and there's no magic bullet. It doesn't happen overnight, but there really are things that you can put in place. And if you're committed to a schedule over a period of time, you really can start to change your relationship with sleep.
The key to getting a good night's sleep, Andy says, actually starts much earlier in the day.
How much time do you take out for yourself in any way, whether it's simply resting, whether it's getting some exercise, whether it's being with friends? How much sort of time a day do you give to yourself for that stuff?
I'd say, you know, I don't know. I don't have a lot of downtime where I'm just like, oh, I can just completely let go and completely relax.
Okay. Very often, the restlessness of the mind will build up in the body, and we experience that restlessness and it can come out in a whole host of different ways. It can be itchiness. It can be a lot of sort of, you know, moving around and finding it difficult to sit still. But sometimes simply committing to 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day, if you can, of quite vigorous exercise and building up to that over time, that can actually be a really, really important factor. And there's a fair bit of research as well that shows how exercise, physical exercise, can help us reduce anxiety and depression. And those things will inevitably impact your sleep. The thing that I heard when you were talking to us both earlier is that all of these things tend to come in waves. And yeah. So if you're feeling tired, then you won't go to jiu-jitsu. And I think so what happens
is that
the sleep starts dictating, rather than kind of saying, okay, each day I'm going to commit to these two things, regardless of how last night went.
This is the first rule. Make sure you exercise, even when you're tired, especially when you're tired. The physical activity, it becomes a cue that your body expects. And so when you don't have it, when you disrupt that cycle because you're feeling exhausted, it throws off everything. Your stress levels go up, and that impacts your sleeping patterns. And this ties into the next rule, because getting a good night's sleep, it's not just about your body. It's also about training your mind.
Do you experience your mind as more active when you lie down at nighttime than during the rest of the day?
That's an excellent question. I don't know.
So what usually happens is we lie down at night, we put our head on the pillow, we're suddenly free from any conversation, any dialogue, any activity of any kind. And it can feel like the floodgates have just opened, and it's like, wow, suddenly there are all these thoughts. And again, the temptation is to think that that's what happens when we go to bed. So that builds up anxiety around going to bed. Because if you're going to bed every night thinking, okay, I've just got to stop the thoughts, or I just need to try and create a state of mind, you're putting so much pressure on yourself. And then when it doesn't happen, that it's just demoralizing, and then you feel like, oh, I can't do it. And then all of a sudden, we start thinking that sleep is something that we do rather than something that happens naturally.
Yeah, every night it's like I have to run this marathon. It's like I have to get there. I have to get to it. Like, how's it going to go tonight?
The trick, says Andy, is to train yourself in how to let those thoughts go. And one way to do that is meditation, which, contrary to what you might have heard in the past, isn't actually about emptying your mind. Rather, it's about learning to intensely focus in a way that you can manage your thoughts. And meditation itself, it's like taking your brain to the gym and exercising this one very specific mental muscle.
I would really encourage you, and I know mornings are a busy time for all of us. There's lots of things going on in everyone's households, and everyone's trying to get to work and everything else. I would really try to carve out 10 minutes in the morning where, regardless of how that night's sleep has gone, that's done, that's finished, it's behind us, we sit down for 10 minutes and we train in mindfulness. Focus on being more present in the body, learning how to step out of the thinking, noticing when you get distracted, and coming back to the breath or whatever your object of focus is. When you do that, you do a few things happen. One, you let go of any sort of sense of grogginess from the night before. You calm the body, you calm the mind, and you set the intention. You lay down the foundation for the entire day. We start to create this feeling of continuity, stability of mind, where we know where we are in the day. Over a period of time, that means when we go to bed, the mind isn't so hurried, it's not so restless, it's not so confused. By the time you get to bed, the body already understands that you're winding down to sort of drift off.
Ben, let me ask, how different is that from what you're doing right now? Like, does that sound like advice that's a change?
The 10 minutes, the mindfulness thing in the morning is definitely different. I've never done that in my life. what he said earlier about, you know, sleep is something that happens to us is not something I'd ever thought about. And just letting the thoughts come and go is not something I had considered. I think it's what people probably do naturally.
Andy, let me ask you, because, you know, I hear what you're saying, and that sounds so attractive to be able to, like, watch the thought come in and then watch it walk away and not feel any attachment to it. But how do I actually do that? Like, it's harder to do than
absolutely
just to say.
Of course. Most of the research studies around insomnia and mindfulness, they're 8 weeks long. So this isn't kind of you have to become a monk or a nun and you have to go off and do that whole thing. Like if you can kind of commit to a daily mindfulness practice for say 10 to 20 minutes a day, but 10 minutes is definitely enough over a 6 to 8 week period, then you would absolutely start to experience the ability to be less engaged with thinking. So to be able to see thoughts, not necessarily chasing after the exciting ones, not necessarily resisting the difficult ones, but instead actually just being more at ease, more okay, comfortable with the idea of thoughts coming and going. You're just happy to lie down and let the mind drift off to sleep.
I'm at the point now where if I thought becoming a monk would solve my sleep issue, I'd probably do it.
Yeah.
forget this whole therapy thing. Who needs an income? I'm going to go. Yeah. I'm going to go to the Zen Center and just robe up.
And the thing is, you could train to become a monk like Andy did, but that's not really necessary. Because there's a few things that we can do in the safety of our own bedrooms that will probably be a little bit easier. And after this quick break, Andy will walk us through a sleep meditation. You might want to put on your pajamas.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
We're back. And before you get under the covers at night, Andy says, you should observe some basic sleep hygiene.
The first thing I would say is make sure that your phone is off and is far enough away from you that you're not going to roll over and pick it up as soon as this exercise is finished. So commit to sort of letting go.
Andy says you want to make sure your bedroom is cool and it's dark. You should wind down your screen time and avoid eating snacks and drinking alcohol too close to when you go to bed.
Make sure you've done everything that you need to for the night. You've been to the restroom and you feel kind of comfortable in bed.
Now, before Andy guides us through this meditation, a quick word of caution. Be careful not to actually fall asleep, especially if you're listening to this while driving.
And then I would start by lying flat on your back and just take a big, deep breath, breathing in through the nose. And as you breathe out through the mouth, just allowing the body just to sink down into the bed. And you can close your eyes whenever you feel ready, if you haven't done already. And I just like you to notice the different sort of touch points. So it might be the heels against the bed, the backs of the legs against the bed, the lower back, middle back, the shoulders, back of the head, the arms, the hands, the fingers. So you're really taking your attention out of the mind, bringing it into the body. So as you lie there, the temptation is to either think about something or to wish you weren't thinking about something. We're going to forget all about thinking. So just let your mind do whatever it wants to do, just for the time being. I'd like you to gently place your hand on your stomach and just notice how the body's breathing. So that rising and falling sensation. You don't have to breathe in any special way. So there's essentially nothing to do here. The body's going to breathe. We're just going to notice and feel that rising and falling sensation. And as you're doing this, there's a very good chance that thoughts from the day are going to arise in the mind. Again, we just see them And we just say, okay, for now, we just let them go. Come back to the breath again. And so just by bringing the attention into the body, we start to ground the mind a little bit. Things start to slow down. And then what I like to do if my mind is really very busy is at this point just to start counting backwards. You can either start at 1,000, or if you feel really ambitious, you can start at 10,000. So this gives the mind just enough to focus on, but not so much that it disrupts us or moves us away from a point of relaxation. It's more sort of just something to keep the mind pleasantly busy as we allow the body to unwind and move towards a place of sleep. And for most people, sometime during this process of counting down, they'll slowly drift off to sleep.
I feel very relaxed.
Andy's voice is kind of incredible. You know, yeah. I think he could incite world peace if they broadcasted him, you know, enough.
If we do this meditation and we fall asleep, what about when we wake up, though, in the middle of the night?
So there's a whole bunch of different advice kind of around this. Most sleep experts will say if you wake up and you remain awake for a period of time and you're starting to get a bit restless and anxious in bed, that it's actually better to get out of bed, to turn on the light, to read a book, or, you know, until you feel tired again, and then go back to sleep, so that you don't set up this sort of place in the bed where you're just kind of anxious the whole time. That's not how I approach it personally. If I wake up in the middle of the night, and it does happen, again, if the kids are unwell or something, then we might be waking up 3-4 times a night. Then I genuinely use that counting exercise myself. I will go through that same process each time. I lie on my back, I'll take a deep breath, I'll step out of the mind, I'll ground the body, and then I start at 10,000 and I just start counting backwards.
Let me ask about one other thing that Ben brought up. Ben, you mentioned that you feel physically restless a lot when you're in bed. And yeah. And I can identify with this because my wife, when we're going to bed, mm-hmm. she insists that she has restless leg syndrome, which she does not have
my
restless
wife
leg.
Too. My wife too.
And I think what she really means is that she just wants me to be on a small part of the bed so that she can move around the rest of the bed as much as she wants. So what about that? Should we fight that urge?
Yeah, so look, restless leg syndrome is an interesting one. So my mind went to one of the monasteries where we weren't allowed to scratch. And that was really interesting because as human beings, we feel an element of discomfort and immediately we go to remove it, which is natural. It's normal. Why wouldn't we? And so we feel an itch, we scratch it. And the interesting thing was within that environment, when you observed the itch, more sort of from a point of awareness rather than, oh, how can I get rid of it? Actually, you start to see it and experience it in a different way. And often the itch would dissolve. It would just sort of disappear over time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Ben, what do you think about that? Like, as you're feeling restless in bed, if you were to try and sort of be beyond it, what do you think would happen?
I feel like I'd explode. I don't know. Yeah. Like itching is a big problem. I do get restless leg syndrome sometimes when I'm really stressed out.
Some of these concepts are much bigger and broader, and wouldn't if we were chatting one to one, there's no way that I would be sitting here saying, "Oh yeah, just see it as a feeling and kind of just stay with it," because you know there's no way we'd be having that discussion. Just to be clear, so it's working in stages. And my hope would be that as you reduce the amount of stress in your life, you would start to experience less restlessness at nighttime. And as you experience less restlessness, there would be more space in the mind to kind of say, huh, okay, well, not all the time and every night, but just once in a while, if I feel kind of itchy, I might just stay with that just for 30 seconds and just see what happens.
So we've talked about what to do during the day before to bring down our stress levels, what we do before we go to bed, what we do in bed, what we do when we wake up in the middle of the night. What about when, which is just, there's just one thing left, right? Like, what do we do when we wake up in the morning?
Well, the best bit of advice I got from one of my teachers, you know, when I asked him what I should do first thing in the morning, he said, you know what, before you do anything else, whether you lie there, or whether you sit there, just be grateful that you've woken up, because the alternative, well, you know, it's not so good. And he kind of threw it away, you know, as a one-liner, as these Tibetan monks do. But, you know, I really took it to heart. And to this day, I still take 60 seconds, 2 minutes, just to not do anything, but just grateful that I woke up, because, you know, it's not a given.
This last rule might be my favorite one, because no matter how hard it was to sleep the night before, no matter how stressful your life is, and Ben is dealing with a lot of heavy stuff in his day job, you should take a moment when you wake up and just be thankful that you're alive. Thank you to Ben for sharing his harrowing experiences at night with us. And by the way, Ben has a podcast of his own called Look, Just Tell Me What to Do. Ben, I hope we did. And thank you to Andy Puddicombe for his great advice and super soothing voice, which you can hear more of in the Headspace app. So if you've heard this show before, you know that it exists because listeners send us emails with burning questions and problems they're trying to solve. And we want to hear from you. Send us a note at howto@slate.com and we might be able to help. That's howto@slate.com. Finally, if you have a spare moment, please subscribe to our show for free and give us a 5-star rating and a review in Apple Podcasts. That helps people find the show, which means we can help more people and hopefully we all get a better sleep. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rachel Allen is our production assistant and Merritt Jacob is our engineer. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown. June Thomas is the senior managing producer of Slate Podcasts, and Gabriel Roth is Slate's editorial director for audio. Special thanks to Asha Saluja and Sung Park. I'm Charles Duhigg. Thanks for listening.